slam knife. And it just goes on like that for the whole side of the cassette.
You don't say.
That's a band from Finland. It's cold there. Everybody's metal. Their name is EXO.
I bet Finland has their own, like, alphabet.
No.
Yes.
Everyone there is metal.
No, they're part of Scandinavia, or they're at least Scandinavia adjacent. So
look at that cover.
Uh huh. That's so metal.
That's pretty forbidding looking. Uh huh. See it?
Yeah. They have Fluffy Pop. I guarantee you they do.
EXO. Should go find that record.
So this is a podcast.
Linoleum Knife is a podcast of the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
I am your main number one host. My name is $15 to park in Beverly Hills.
You are Wendy Pepper's daughter who wandered in off the street and is lucky to have a microphone.
My name is Dave White. I am the film critic for movies.com. What's your name?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film critic for TheRap.com and What the Flick.
And I really did just pay $15 to park in Beverly Hills.
That's crazy. I thought they had all those city lots.
They do.
And it was 15 bucks?
Free for the first 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then $15.
Wow.
A minute after that.
Well, you spent too much time in Beverly Hills, clearly.
I needed to go from shop to shop. On Rodeo Drive, mm-hmm. trying on dresses, waiting for someone to tell me that this was not my kind of store that I should leave.
Ah, right.
So that then I could say, big mistake. Mm-hmm. Huge.
That's adorable. Did you get me anything from the cheese shop? Where they have the fancy Beverly Hills cheese?
We did go into the cheese shop.
Mm-hmm.
And purchases were made,
uh-huh.
but not by me.
I see.
They were made by my shopping companion.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all I can say.
Yes.
About the
purchases. Who will remain nameless so that we won't give away for whom cheeses were being purchased.
There was no cheese purchased.
Oh.
They sell a variety of other gourmet treats.
True.
In the cheese place.
But it's a cheese place.
But it is a cheese place.
First and foremost. And
do you remember the time we bought actual cheese in that cheese shop?
Yeah.
It was like $37 for this little thing of
nothing,
cheese.
Nothing in this store has a price tag on it. It is literally, if you have to ask, you can't afford it, lingerie. And, of course, you get to the register, and they ring it up, and it's too late. It's too embarrassing to turn
you're
back.
You're like, wait a second. So you're stuck. This cheese costs a lot of money.
You're stuck buying $37 cheese.
What am I supposed to do with it now? And it's too nice to eat.
And you slink out, chalking it up to a lesson learned.
This is how you know.
You spent $37 learning to never, ever buy anything at the Beverly Hills cheese shop again.
This is how you know. When John Larroquette is standing in front of you in line, which is what happened on that day.
He's got that fat night court bank.
You should probably think to yourself, can I afford this cheese shop? TV's John Larroquette is shopping here mm-hmm. and doesn't seem to mind what anything costs.
Nope.
That's how you know. If you're in some place where a celebrity is, it's going to cost you. I was in the fancy paper store one day.
I remember this.
And in walked Miss Halle Berry.
Yes.
And I thought, I should just leave.
That's my cue to exit.
That's my cue that I'm not meant to be here buying any kind of fancy paper. I ended up buying fancy paper there.
She had one of
those
yet.
It was Christmas, and I wanted to get fancy paper to wrap one of your special gifts in.
Mm.
And I did.
Yes.
And it was great.
Wait,
that was fancy paper.
It is one of the signs.
I stole it right out of the hands of Halle Berry.
Give me that.
I said, give it to me. I need it more than you.
It's one of the signs of our coupledom that we have separate stores where we purchase fancy paper for wrapping each
other. So we don't. Clothes. Well, but no, I've got a whole new separate store, though.
Ah, okay.
Remember last year?
Right. As long as it's different from my store of fancy paper.
Last year.
That's all I
asked. I did the brilliant move. I went on eBay and I bought vintage Christmas gift wrap paper.
Yes.
Here's why. Number one, no one else in the world is going to have their gift wrapped in this paper.
True.
Because they're all dead. Number two, you might think that vintage Christmas gift wrap paper on eBay costs a lot of money. It does not. It costs like $3. Because no one is thinking, oh, I want to go get some paper from 1963 and wrap a Christmas gift in it.
They should be
thinking that because it's amazing what you can find. But it's apparently there's not a huge demand for this.
Mm. Well, there will be now that you've gone and spilled the beans.
From my mouth to the world.
We won't even talk about girly candles.
You 3 dozen people listening to this show are going to get right on eBay and drive up the cost of vintage Christmas gift wrap. Seriously, it's cheaper than getting it from Target.
Yeah.
And it's one of a kind, and it's usually amazing looking. So I don't even go to the Halle Berry's favorite fancy paper store anymore.
Mm.
I don't need it. I've found another exciting location.
Well, there you go.
And I don't know why we're talking about this. Why are we talking about $15
to park in Beverly Hills?
$15 to park in Beverly Hills.
Yes. I can tell you now.
I was there Christmas shopping with our friend.
I'm not buying you anything in Beverly Hills.
What if I tell you that there are some things that I really want that I saw today? Some really important things that I need for Christmas from Beverly Hills.
Too bad. Not happening.
So, look.
I'm not paying $15.
I saw a lot of items that I'm going to put on my wish list.
Keep wishing. Speaking of the impending holidays.
Yeah.
I think
I hear that you have a book for sale.
Well, there's that. We can start there. My book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Yep.
Which people tell me they like.
Let's cut to the chase on this.
Uh-huh.
It's $20.
Yes.
All right.
And I will sign it.
$17 for the book, $3 to ship it, $20.
Within the United States.
It will be, yeah, within the United States. If you live somewhere else, it's going to cost more. I'm sorry. That's just how it goes. You get the privilege of paying a full retail price for this book, but what you get is going to be wonderful. You will believe that it's A Wonderful Life when you get it because it will be signed
by the author
with a special personal note to you
with
your name spelled correctly.
That's right.
Also, little treats in the book, flat papery treats. It'll also be wrapped up in some nice paper.
Yes.
That we got at Target.
Yes, you don't get the eBay paper,
You don't get the sweet eBay paper.
If you want to order one, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
You should order one. This book is so great.
And we'll give you all the information you need.
I wouldn't even say that. It's like, it's not that, I mean, yes, you're my husband and all that stuff, but, and I like you fine, but.
Thanks.
Ish. But the book is really great. It's such a great, like, I paid more attention to that book than I ever did that 101 Must See Movies for Gay Men book that you put out. I don't even think I finished reading that book entirely. I forgot it. And
well, you know, I was 5 years more mature as a film writer.
So much. Also, I just like Christmas and the Christmas movies of all stripes. So many weird movies in this book that it made people who actually reviewed the book dislike the book sometimes because they were like, "That's not a Christmas movie." And well, you know what? It is because it's in a Christmas movie book.
Because I say so.
Yeah.
There you go.
So.
What I also wanted to bring up, given
another merchandise item that is going to be for sale very soon.
We're so very excited to be offering, finally, after 3 years on the air.
We didn't have enough people who wanted them for until 3 years.
The Linoleum Knife T-shirt.
That's right.
The Linoleum Knife T-shirt.
Designed by our friend,
Graham Colbeans.
Graham Colbeans, who is a filmmaker
and an fancy artist, book guy.
And a book author and editor, and he's real cool.
And so we put a picture of it on our Facebook page, the Linoleum Knife Podcast Facebook page, which if you have not already liked, please go and do. We are taking pre-orders for the shirts, and our goal is to get them to you well before Christmas, but that depends on how many pre-orders we get, so make it snappy, people.
Also, $20, and we have the sizes that we will have will be up to XX.
Yes, ML, XL, and XXL.
Yeah.
And we're not going to make the
S. How many S's? All right, tell us if you're an S.
Yeah, if you're an S, we'll see what we can do.
Let us know. I mean, we'll try to fit you and your tiny self.
But I'm going to say this. We're not going to charge extra for XX the way some people do.
No, we are not.
We do not roll like that.
No, we're...
Because
we are XXs.
Exactly. So again, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We'll tell you where to PayPal us and all that stuff. And we are accepting advance orders, and we will get the t-shirts out to you as soon as we can. But we're very excited about this. This is our first time doing
our first official... Merch.
Linoleum Knife merch. We are working on our first DVD commentary, which we're hoping to have up in the next few weeks.
No, not hoping. It will be up right after Thanksgiving is over.
All right, fine.
Yeah, not, there's no hope.
Well, I don't want to overpromise.
There is no try.
Fine. Right after Thanksgiving, we will have our first Linoleum Knife DVD commentary.
For sale.
For sale of the...
so many chances for you to give us a lot of money.
Exactly. For the, of the holiday classic... White Christmas, starring Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney, a movie that we both like a whole lot.
And know like the back of our hand.
In different ways. And and yeah, we're very excited to be, to offer you 2 solid hours of us talking about it that you can listen to while you're watching
while you're watching
it yet again this Christmas season.
You should listen to it while you're watching
Absolutely, yes. It is a DVD commentary. That's how it's designed. And just run us through the other speakers, and it'll be great.
Because we're so great.
And that will be... much less than $20. We haven't decided yet what that's going to be, but it'll be cheap.
Yeah, it's going to be barely anything.
Yeah, it'll be a bargain. But more on that as we get closer to it. Anyway, so yeah, so that's all happening. So give us your money, people. You've been getting the show for free for 3 years. Show us you love us,
which is what it's been worth. And so now we're going to talk about these movies that came out this week. The first big one. Let's just get Thor out of the way.
Sure, Thor.
Thor came out this week.
Thor: The Dark World.
The Dark World.
But
say something about it.
Why me? All
you're the one who's the nut on comic books and whatever.
Well, only compared to you. Believe me, I'm a dilettante at best. I haven't read comics in ages, mainly because I can't afford it. So it's we pick up where, not so much where Thor left off, I guess, is where the Avengers left off. Millennia ago, there was this thing called the Aether, and these, what are they, trolls?
Elves.
The Dark Elves.
The Dark Elves.
Led by a guy named Malekith. We're going to use the ether to destroy all the universes at this precise point when all the planets lined
up. Every 5,000 years.
Yes.
Malekith is played by Christopher Eccleston.
Right, but you'd barely know because he's covered in makeup.
He's covered in stuff.
So Odin and the Asgardians managed to foil his plot 5,000 years ago. Well, wouldn't you know it? That anniversary has come due again.
Here it is. It's ready.
And Jane Foster, Natalie Portman, still trying to find Thor on Earth, and in her searching, oops, stumbles upon the ether.
Literally trips over it.
Yeah. Like Dick Van Dyke in an ottoman. And so only Thor can save us all from the bad
thing. If you're questioning who will fix this problem.
Yes.
That would be Thor.
Yes.
So he does that.
Yes.
The end.
Pretty much.
And to tell you anything more would really be getting into the territory of telling you too much, because all this movie really has, by way of surprise, are these little plot details that honestly didn't feel like revelations to me, because I'm not well enough versed in the Marvel Universe to understand what their significance might be.
Well, you're talking about the post credits stuff.
No, I'm talking about things they talk about in the film, where you said literally to me as I was writing, "Oh, you shouldn't mention that." This thing that I was about to write about, and you said you shouldn't mention that. And I was like, "Why?" And he's like, "Well,
that's a spoiler."
That's a spoiler. And I'm like, "What? The movie didn't treat it like a spoiler. They just said it." But apparently it is a spoiler.
If you follow the comics, then you will. Yeah. There will be things that if you mention.
So I didn't want to be. You know, you don't want to mess with these people.
No,
because I'll tell you, I heard some of them talking on the way out of the theater at the press screening, and their loud yappy braying is. I turned to Ellis, Mark Ellis of the Schmoes. I turned to Ellis and I go, "If I never hear another fanboy open his big dumb mouth for the rest of my life."
Well, they spend most of their time online. They're not used to having an inside voice with other people in the room.
There was this guy who just was like, blah, 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 blah. And then did you know the thing with the thing and the blah, blah. And I thought, oh, I wish I could kill you with a big hammer. Like Thor.
With Mjolnir.
Where's Thor to come kill you with a big hammer? It's just the most grating, obnoxious thing to hear, and it kills cinema. It just does. Like, I'm happy with a superhero movie. I'm really happy with a superhero movie. I loved the first Thor. I really like this Thor.
I loved the
Captain America movie.
I did like this one. I had a lot more fun at this
one. But what I'm not into is people ruining everything by turning it into the most, like, minute dissection of a world. Out loud, in public, right next to my face, where I can't get away from it, and they're not even talking to me, they're just announcing themselves to the universe.
That's how evangelicals ruin Christianity.
I know. Believe me, I know. So... So anyway, here's about the film itself.
Mm-hmm.
Thor is changing.
Yes.
Thor is smoldering. He is... still very powerful, and he's like a demigod or something like that? Is he a god? What is he like? He's godlike.
He's godlike. Yeah. The movies sort of dial that down.
They don't, yeah. And, but in the first film, and I believe this is entirely because of Kenneth Branagh, there was a sort of stately feel to him. He strutted about like he was a king of something.
Right.
And he spoke that way, too. He had this weird way of speaking, you know. And
well, the first movie that you'll recall is about him being arrogant and being knocked down.
I know, but I like arrogant, egotistical, fancy-talking, weird-talking Thor.
Right.
I like that guy. And
Dost thy mother know that thou hast taken her drapes?
That's right. And so the thing is that this, as Thor progresses and evolves as a character, stop laughing at what I just said. He becomes more human-ish.
Right.
He relates to people. He reacts like a human. He talks to them sort of at their level.
To live like the human.
Yeah, and so that's interesting as a character development. But for me, it just makes it sort of diminishes him a little bit.
I see.
Like, he needs to really hurl that hammer if he's gonna if he's gonna act and talk like Natalie Portman, then. Then he's really going to step up the game with the hammer throwing. So
I guess I like this version of Thor better.
I really do like this version.
Character.
Oh, okay. Well, I like this film a lot. And so the character, I can get over them making him less grandiose.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
Yeah, I think this movie does a lot right. They give us just enough Kat Dennings. They give us just enough...
She did not bother me this time.
Us just enough Anthony Hopkins, super hamming it up.
He's... lazy, go on.
I feel like maybe that, not to get too spoilery, but that I think that things are spinning too much in the direction of Tom Hiddleston because everybody loves him so much.
The press screening I went to,
mm-hmm.
the biggest applause,
yeah.
the biggest laughs, the biggest cheers for Loki.
Yeah.
And there's a good reason for that.
Right.
He... crushes it.
He did. No, he's
as
terrific.
Loki. He's the best. Like, I gotta say, I like Loki better than I like Thor now Loki's such a badass.
He's more fun. Although I feel like some of that came along late in the game, in terms of like the filmmakers realizing, oh,
Loki's trending.
Yeah, exactly. Loki's trending. I feel like there were some decisions that were sort of tacked on.
That's fine with me.
Clumsily to accommodate that, but you know, whatever. It's neither.
Chris Hemsworth better watch his back.
He's not going anywhere.
I know, but what I'm saying is that Loki could become the star of this franchise.
Look, you know, playing Batman was always the thankless gig because the villains always had the more interesting stuff to do. Going all the way back to Burton, if not the TV show.
Like, if you think you don't want to see this movie, you do want to see it because of Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah.
Furthermore, you also want to see The Deep Blue Sea, starring Tom Hiddleston and Rachel Weisz, where he is not Loki, but he is...
just as bad.
Actually even worse than Loki in The Deep Blue Sea, where he plays Rachel Weisz's post-World War II lover in England, and he just ruins her.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful film. It came out last year? A
couple years ago, I think.
And...
Terrence Davis.
Why don't I make that my DVD pick of the week, since you poo-pooed my earlier DVD pick of the week, since it's not a movie.
Only because you've done it to me every time I've dared stray.
Well, I've never done it before. So. My DVD pick of the week was, it still is.
Fine.
One of my two DVD picks of the week is the complete Partridge Family, which I've been watching obsessively ever since it came in the house, and I'm going to watch every episode. There are 100 of them. Mm. My favorite TV show when I was 6-7 years old.
Which, for all intents and purposes, you still are.
Only when it comes to the Partridge Family. But the Deep Blue Sea, so terrific.
Yes.
You like Tom Hiddleston, you'll really like him in this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Thor is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think it's a placeholder. I don't think it has anything to say.
It's nothing special.
And I was pretty happy about that, too, because I really don't need any more 9/11 from my superheroes.
Yeah.
I make a movie about 9/11. Fine. Do it tastefully if you can. It's been yet to be proven if anyone can.
But no more Man of Steel people with plaster on their faces staggering through downtown.
I've been okay with the superhero appropriation of 9/11, but I think it's time to move on from that as a thing. And this movie does. This movie completely. The final battle sequence is so much fun. Mm-hmm. Like, up until the final battle sequence, I was feeling like they were a little unspecial. Mm-hmm. Like, they weren't really doing anything out of the ordinary.
Right.
And I was a little sort of bored by the battle sequences up until the last one. Uh-huh. And the last one ties together these things that happen in the beginning of the movie that don't really seem like they're going anywhere, and then they do go somewhere in the final battle sequence, and it's so visually excellent to look at, exciting to look at, surprising, and funny, which is another thing I like about the Marvel Universe, is that they do not feel burdened by heaviosity.
Right.
Batman, The Dark Knight, and this last Superman, these guys are not happy dudes.
No.
But the Marvel heroes, they're kind of kicking it.
And they're freewheeling.
And they have fun, and they make jokes, and they do funny things.
Chris O'Dowd pops up in a couple of scenes. Yes. It's very funny in this.
There's another cameo in the movie that I won't give away that's a big surprise and hilarious.
Yeah.
You probably already went to see it this weekend, but
sit through all the credits, because there are two servings of shawarma in this movie that you'll need to be up on.
One of them is completely confusing if you don't know anything about Marvel. Like me, I had to come home and ask you what it was.
And I was looking it up, because I kind of had a vague notion of what it was, but
And the other one's just a goof.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Also opening this weekend.
The Book Thief.
And we're talking on like
Book Thief.
That's
the title song.
It opened on 4 screens, I think. Apparently based on a very popular YA novel that I plan never to read.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
YAs don't read The Book Thief. It can't be any better than this film.
Movie really goes out on a limb.
Read The Diary of Anne Frank, and that's all you need, YAs.
This movie goes out on a limb and takes the really...
Do we have any YA listeners?
Yeah, I'm sure.
If you are a YA, please let us know. Tell us who you are and how old you are.
Some that I'm
you're listening.
Some that I'm related to. I don't know if they still count as YA at this point, or if they've outgrown it. If you're a freshman in college, are you still YA or no?
You're a grown woman.
Okay. Well, then we'll not count that. Then.
She's a grown lady now.
Yes.
I know which one you're talking about.
W-O-M-A-N. Anyway, The Book Thief takes the very bold twin stances of being pro-literacy and anti-Nazi.
Reading is good.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler is bad.
Yes. Wow.
The end.
Chew on that.
It's a brave, brave film.
Yeah. This is a movie that when I got home from the screening, I had to warn Dave not to laugh out loud at a big moment toward the end.
It wouldn't have mattered if there were only two other people in the theater.
Right. Well, but just in case you had seen it with actual humans in the seats. Right. Because I almost laughed out loud, but I heard some old lady near me go, oh. And I was like, I had to stifle myself.
See, that's when you turn around to the old lady and go, are you stupid? lived this long and you're still suckered by this kind of thing?
It was all I could
do. What are you, dumb?
It was all I could do not to bwahaha.
You should have bwahaha.
Yeah. Why don't you explain what this is about?
There's a girl. Her name is Liesel. She's a little blonde-haired, blue-eyed moppet. She has gigantic, wet eyes. She's played by Sophie Nelis is her name. She's been in, like, two other movies. She's like, 12. She gets adopted by...
Why don't you explain who narrates the film?
Death. And you would think that that would make me love it. I should love a movie narrated by Death. That's right up my alley. Oh, Death narrates this movie? One, please. I'm ready. Bring it on, Death, narrate. Do it better than Alec Baldwin and the Royal Tenenbaums. And I'm yours. So, I don't know who the actor is who narrates.
Some Death. British stage. I thought it was Michael Gambon, but it was not. Death, some guy who is not Michael Gambon, who sounds like Michael
Death
Gambon.
Death narrates this movie and says things like, "And at that moment, I folded him into my arms." Seriously. "And I came to understand humans a little more on that day." Me, Death. Can you believe it? I finally understand humans. I've been Death forever. For all eternity, I've been Death. Just now, it took the Holocaust.
And the book thief.
It took the book. It took a little girl stealing books from Nazis to teach me Death. About human nature. Can you believe it?
Oh, God, this movie.
Oh, the little children and their wisdom. So she steals these... Yeah. Okay, so she gets adopted by Jeffrey Rush, Academy Award winner Jeffrey Rush, and Academy Award nominee Emily Watson.
Who are so German.
They are super German. Yeah, we should have had Tilo on. our German bro.
Yes.
We should have had him on today to talk about this movie. Of course, we would have had to drag him
to it.
He would have laughed his ass off for the whole thing.
Yeah.
So they adopt her, and she can't read or write. So they teach it to her. Jeffrey Rush reads her books, and she becomes super in love with reading. And the mom, Emily Watson, does the laundry for the Bürgermeister. And the Bürgermeister's wife invites her in with the laundry and says, "Would you like to see my library?" And she says, "Oh, yes, I would love to see your library." And so she goes in the library, and she gets to go to the library every time she brings the laundry and read a book. Not lend a book. The Bürgermeister's wife won't lend her the book. It's not like, "Oh, this is my library where I actually lend you books." It's, "You can sit here in my drawing room.
Please, you're not going to read. You're not
gonna, get your grubby little bands all
over
my
book." You're not going to loan your books to the daughter of the laundress when you are Mrs. Bürgermeister.
You know what? You could.
She was the first lady of that town.
If you were nice, you could. Instead of being like, "Yes, I deign to let you sit on my chair and read this book." Anyway.
And then she grows close to the little Aryan moppet next door who I thought was going to launch into "Tomorrow belongs to me" at any moment.
Eventually, the Bürgermeister gets wind of the fact that this urchin is being allowed into the home to read books. It was like, "No more." And so all she has to do is jump through their window and sneak books and steal them, basically.
Right.
She steals books from everybody. Like, it doesn't matter where she finds a book. She's like, there could be her grandmother, if her grandmother were alive, her grandmother could be dying in the street. And if there was a book in her hand, she'd be like, "Save grandma. Take the book. Which one do I do?" Yeah. Take that book.
She fishes a copy of The Invisible Man out of a Nazi book burning.
Yes. It's so hot and smoldering that it's actually, she's smoking from the fumes of the book. Okay, so this goes on.
Then
this movie is about nothing. Almost nothing happens. How you can make a Holocaust movie be actually about nothing is crazy.
Then they hide a Jew in the house.
Then they hide a Jewish dude in the house, and then they read stories, and then he has to run away, and he's like, "Never forget me. Live here. Here's a blank diary I made for you. Write in it every day. I will live in your words." And you think he's going off to die because he's running away, and he's not going to get out of Germany. So, okay, from this point on, we're just going to tell you what happens at the end. Because this movie is so stupid and bad.
Skip ahead a bit, but yeah, we're going to spoil everything about the book thief. So
then the bombs come.
So towards the end of the war, yeah, she's writing in the basement, and these bombers accidentally drop all their payload on this residential avenue that she lives on, Himmelstrasse, Heaven Street, they mentioned about 8,000-9,000 times. Mm-hmm. And
so named because everybody on it is fixing to go to heaven because they're all going to get blown up by a bomb.
Kills Jeffrey Rush, kills Emily Watson, kills Urchin next door. Yep. When she comes staggering out of the rubble.
And by the way, kills him in his striped pajamas.
Yes, which the movie completely doesn't even bother to
acknowledge that might that's mean like something concentration else. Concentration camp. Uniform or no.
No, totally missed that. So she sees the kid lying down. She's like, oh, you can't be dead. And this was my moment where I had to not laugh. She realizes that he's still just the tiniest bit alive.
I'm not quite dead
not yet. Dead yet. He lifts his head up and says, Liesl, I love...
The Holocaust.
It's so stupid. I love.
It is basically. It's the same as that moment in the Adam Sandler movie Click, where
yes,
he has remote controlled his entire life away. He has fast forwarded all the good parts of life, all the hot, long hot showers, fast forwarded right through them. All the great meals, fast forward right through them. All the sex.
With Kate Beckinsale.
With Kate Beckinsale. Sex with Kate Beckinsale. Now, I'm not a heterosexual, but I know that there is not a heterosexual man alive that doesn't want to get it with Kate Beckinsale. No, he wants to fast forward through it with his remote control. He grows old. He has a heart attack. He's lying in a rainstorm in a puddle. I think he might still have the remote control in his hand. And he says... Right before he dies, family comes first. Now, during the press screening of that film, I did laugh out loud when he said that. And I got really angry stares from, again, two old ladies who should have known better.
And it was probably the one time you laughed for the entire Adam Sandler comedy.
Yeah, it was a rotten movie. But yeah, this is The Book Thief is the Click. of Holocaust films. So that's my poster quote. Do the distributors want to use me on the poster? The Click of Holocaust films. It stinks.
P.U.
And worst of all, it doesn't stink just because it's a bad movie. It stinks of its own importance.
Oh yeah, this is so like award season. Feel good World War II movie. I just kept thinking, you know what? You want to see a war? Go see Sarah's Key. You want to see a World War II movie? You know, go see a
it
movie.
It makes Life is Beautiful look like show.
Go see a movie where all the French Jews get herded into like the velodrome and then killed, and then you know people are you know the landlady is turning in her Jewish tenants so that somebody new can move in that she can charge more rent from. That's a Holocaust movie. Don't give me this garbage. Ugh. Book thief.
There's another one you could watch on DVD. Showa just came out on Blu-ray not long ago. Criterion.
Oh, right.
9 hours.
If you don't have 9 hours, you could watch Sarah's Key.
You got 9 hours. You got 9 hours. You got 9 hours to watch Showa. You got 9 hours in your life to watch Showa.
I've always said...
Don't start with me about it.
I've always said Showa would be
wrong.
Shorter.
You know, no, you are wrong. Mm. It's monumental. It is devastating. It is a work of art. End of that. We're done with that conversation.
It could do with some editing.
I win that conversation.
Yeah, whatever.
Just know that right there.
So yeah, you could do much better than The Book Thief. Do not watch The Book Thief. It's stupid. Two more movies that you did not see this week.
Hooray for not seeing.
Well, no. One you should have seen was the Hayao Miyazaki's The Wind Rises.
Well, I will be seeing it this week.
Oh, you're going to go? Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm going.
It's having a 1 week... Academy qualifying run in one screen in L.A., one screen in New York, apparently selling out like crazy. And then the Landmark in L.A., they had to move it from Friday to Saturday to a larger screen. Duh.
Yeah.
What were they thinking not putting it on a huge screen? Anyway. Anyway. Terrific. It's super. He says it's his last movie, which he's been saying.
How old is he?
I don't know off the top of my head. He's in his 70s at least.
At least.
And he's been saying...
Well, then he needs to keep doing, because Manuel de Oliveira...
I was going
to
say, Manuel de Oliveira is...
That dude's like 109 years old and he's still directing films.
He's been saying, he said before that you know, oh, this is my last film. Like, I think he said it about Princess Mononoke, and I think he said it about Spirited Away, but he may actually mean it this time. And if that's
Listen,
the case...
Listen, Mr. Miyazaki, look what happened to Charles Schulz the minute he quit Peanuts.
That's right.
He died.
He's 72. He'll be 73 in January.
That ain't old.
No, he should totally still do it.
Get back to work.
Anyway, if this does wind up being his last film, though, he's going out on a high note, because it's tremendous. It's a biopic, oddly enough, of the guy who, of this Japanese aeronautics innovator and airplane designer, who basically, his designs wound up making the Zeros that the Japanese used during World War II. But it's not about, you know, Japanese imperialism. It's about the love of flight, which is a recurring theme for Miyazaki's movies. If you've seen Porco Rosso, if you've seen Kiki's Delivery Service or Laputa, you know, he loves airplanes, he loves flying.
Yep.
And this is a, you know, but because it's a biopic, you know, even though there are dream sequences and sort of fantasy elements, this is really his most sort of grounded in our world that he's ever made, but it's still really compelling and beautifully done. Another great Joe Hisaishi score. You know, and I you don't really see a lot of, you see a lot of movies about artists, but never about engineers.
No.
You know, you very don't. Rarely about inventors, you know. So to see this...
It takes an artist to make a film about an engineer, really.
Absolutely, yeah. But to see him, you know, get inspiration for, you know, the curve of a wing from, like, a mackerel bone, you know, or to talk about why flush riveting is going to make the plane more aerodynamic. You know, it's fascinating, and it's beautiful to watch, and it's just a great movie if you're a Miyazaki fan, and really, why aren't you if you aren't? It's an extraordinary movie. It's one of the best films of this year, no question. I look forward to you seeing it. And if I had time, I would see it with you again. But
I look forward to me seeing it, too.
Yeah.
I might go tomorrow.
Well, all right.
You never know what I'm... Who knows
what you'll do. And then also this opening this week, after being on demand for about the last month or so, is a comedy called Best Man Down. Not to be confused...
I don't care.
...with Best Man Holiday, which opens next week.
It's coming Friday.
Best Man Down is pretty terrible. It stars Justin Long and Jess Wexler as a newlywed couple whose best man, Tyler Labine, drops dead on the night of their wedding after the ceremony.
Yeah.
And rather than go on their honeymoon to Cabo, they have to go to Minnesota to take the body back. And in doing so, they discover all these things about him they never knew, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
It's not funny. It's not insightful. It's not interesting. Forget it. Forget I ever mentioned it. Forget you ever heard it. It's not a movie you ever need to see.
This never happened.
Exactly.
Hey, you know what?
What?
I did see something that you didn't see.
Oh, right. Of course.
I saw Claire Denis.
Bastards.
I don't think we talked about it last week.
No, because you hadn't seen it yet, and you're going to be writing a review for linoleum-knife.com, which people should check out.
A review is going to... It opened in very, very limited release, like in New York and in L.A.
Remind me to put on the website, to remind people about the T-shirts and stuff.
I will.
Okay. Release film.
It's very limited. I assume it may play other large cities, maybe some museums. It seems to be the way her movies wind up being, wending their way through the United States.
Right. Colleges.
One of my favorite filmmakers living today, Claire Denis, French filmmaker. This is her latest, and it is about a man who is a merchant marine who comes back to Paris to settle a score. And he does so by manipulating someone who is related to the person he wants revenge on. I'm not going to say anything more, because it is a strange, dark, and difficult film. Narratively, Claire Denis.
It's a Sundance Selects title, so it might actually be available on demand.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'll look into that after we finish recording.
If there is, I'll put a link up on our Facebook page.
Claire Denis, one of the reasons I love her is because she makes me work.
She's rigorous.
I see too much in this line of work. I see too much stuff that is designed for people who don't want to...
Who need their handheld.
Engage. It's not just hand-holding that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Hand-holding I'm fine with. What I become very tired of and what I become just... I'm so tired of it that I'm not even angry about it anymore. It's just sort of like...
beating you down.
It's beating me down. It's the way that mainstream films give you every single thing. You don't have to engage yourself at all. You can just sit back and let it pour itself on you. And what she does, and I jokingly said this to my friend Matt that I went to see the film with, I pronounced extreme economy of narrative gesture. Because the people in a Claire Denis movie, they already know what's happening to them. If you don't, then your job is to play a bit of catch-up. They're not going to expository conversation anything for you. They are just doing their thing. And if it becomes complicated, and if you don't understand the relationships between this person and that person, you would just have to keep watching. Because eventually, you're going to figure it out. And if you don't figure it out, too bad. That's how she goes. So it really is, not only are her films these dark, beautiful things to look at, but they push you and they make you work for it. And by the end of it, you feel like you just had this really great workout with your mind.
Your mind grapes.
With your mind grapes.
I'm going to remember this the next time that I put the subject at the end of a sentence and you don't let me finish because you already want to know what I'm talking about.
Don't Claire Denis me in real life in public when I'm just asking you about breakfast cereal.
This is a concept you cannot carry into your real life. I just want to be clear on this, Mr. Abstract Thinking Extreme Narrative.
Yeah. Anyway, the movie is Bastards.
Yes.
It's really, really great. It's one of her tougher movies. Like, she kind of splits herself. There are the hardcore Claire Denis films like this, and The Intruder, and Trouble Every Day, stuff like that. And then there are the gentle, sort of loving, kind of humane films like 35 Shots of Rum, and Friday Night, stuff like that.
Where would you put White Material and Beau Travail?
The White Material is definitely on the darker side of the spectrum for her. Beau Travail is so beautiful and so moving and sad that I almost don't want to put it with the super grim, dark stuff. But it's a tragedy. And so it's hard to put it also in the camp of the kind, gentle side of her.
I see.
And it really is kind of like her masterpiece. So, yeah, Beau Travail, dudes, that's the one. Just get it. I go on about her almost as much as I go on about Brazil.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Too bad. You're listening to Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
I'm going to start talking more about Stanley Donen around here.
Yeah, you are.
My DVD pick this week,
yes,
is a movie that is still quite possibly my favorite film of 2013.
Oh, is it?
Which, that, you know, year's not out yet. It could change, but it is the movie to beat at this point for my favorite film of this year.
What would that be?
And that would be Noah Baumbach's Frances Ha, which comes out from Criterion Collection this week.
Keep talking about it while I dig up letters.
Oh, God. Again.
We just started this. Look, I
your was Chris- one job.
I was, no. I was Christmas shopping today all day.
Not buying me cheese.
On Rodeo Drive and not buying you cheese. And we came home and you had everything all set up. And I was like, yay, it's time to podcast. And I forgot to go look at
So, again, your fault. Yeah. Okay. Frances Ha, you know, it's not... I'm sure people want to run right to, you know, 12 Years a Slave and these movies that are about big, important historical events and whatever. And For me, Frances Ha, there's something about the filmmaking language in that film that just sort of cuts through the guck and really tells this really sweet, straightforward story. It creates a wonderfully complicated and funny and character who's lovable but also gets on your nerves.
It is absolutely anti-guck.
And it's just... Greta Gerwig is so great in it. She also co-wrote the film with Baumbach. And it says so much about a certain period of your life and figuring out what you're going to do next and the dumb decisions that you make in your 20s that, you know, you, at the time you regret them, but later you realize they were just sort of things you had to do to kind of learn, you know, not to buy the $37 cheese anymore. It just, I don't know. It's on the one hand, it's so sort of specific and close up in terms of just the quality of the conversations and the things that are being shared in the film, but then they can completely throw in something purely cinematic and joyous, like her kind of dance running down the street while David Bowie's Modern Love plays on the soundtrack. It's a movie that just makes me exceedingly happy, and it does not have a false note in it, and I love it. And if you didn't see it in theaters this year, it's coming out on DVD this week from the Criterion Collection. I cannot recommend Frances Ha highly enough. Love it, love it, love it.
Okay, here's the one letter that I could find that I dug up.
Brother.
Okay. It may be the only one. We may be caught up. We haven't gotten a whole lot of them lately, and you haven't sent me any new ones in the past couple days.
I did not check today.
So, this is from James.
We do have, by the way, some new iTunes reviews, which I want to thank the folks doing that. Yeah, they are good ones.
I need to go look at them.
The more of those we get, the better placement we get on the iTunes homepage for podcasts and stuff. So please, if you have not already, go to iTunes, leave us a good review. We really, really appreciate it.
Hey, chaps. He's British. He called us chaps. I have a non-podcast related question to ask. My friends and I often have movie nights centered around random themes, kind of inspired by your friend Dennis Hensley's pieces in UK Premiere.
Mm-hmm.
Although they don't call it UK Premiere in the UK. They call it just Premiere.
Well, and given that US Premiere shuttered its doors years ago, it's the only Premiere there is.
But we are coming up pretty dry on the latest couple we have come up with. Bear in mind that the film doesn't have to be good. In fact, the worse the better. So we can drink. The two themes we have are evil plants and rubbish movie monsters. For the first, we've only really got The Ruins so far. I love The Ruins.
I didn't see it.
Boy, do I love The Ruins.
I remember you were a fan.
Little Shop of Horrors being too good and obvious, and Day of the Triffids being too meh. Let's start
Killer
with that.
Killer plant movies.
Matango.
Matango, the Fungus of Terror. Yes, true.
Matango, Fungus of Terror.
Does
Invasion of the Body Snatchers count?
I mean, they are pods, but they're good. These are good movies. If they're rejecting Little Shop of Horrors for being too good,
bad movies about plants.
There's something called like the Coriolis effect
Matango
or something.
Is good. Matango's a good movie.
More like a plant, a witness to a murder or something. That's, you've really painted us into a corner here. There aren't a lot of plant movies, good or bad.
Let us think on that one.
Yeah. We have another letter from Melbourne, Australia. Just want that listener to know we will get to it eventually.
For the second, we've got, so far, Cue the Winged Serpent.
Yay.
Which is a great film.
That is great.
But as a monster that looks like it was fashioned from Play-Doh.
Well, yeah.
Anaconda.
Wait, what's the second theme?
Rubbish movie monsters.
Oh, okay.
Anaconda, the gloriously bad majesty of this film should speak for itself.
Mm.
And some black and white thing I need to get hold of called The Giant Claw, which I don't.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know about that.
Jeff Chandler, I want to say. Yeah, that's sort of infamous.
We've already done Sharktopus and Birdemic before people suggest those.
Oh, well, okay.
There's so many of them.
Crappy monsters, that's simple. Well, okay, you need The Creeping Terror, which is rotten. The Giant Gila Monster, most of the Bird Eye Gordon catalog, The Earth versus the Spider, Food of the Gods, Empire of the Ants.
Night of the Lepus,
Frogs. Definitely. Yeah. Gorgo, which is featured on the Mystery Science Theater 25th anniversary box that came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll...
Google food bad of, monster movies.
Food of the find Gods plenty. Is really where you need yeah. to go to Food of the Gods.
Yeah, yeah.
Food of the Gods is our suggestion. Yeah.
Definitely. And Empire of the Ants has Joan Collins.
He says, I'm off to Antarctica this Thursday.
Wow. Oh, right, yes. Yeah. So he was asking on Facebook for suggestions of movies to put in his iPad.
Missing a few of your November podcasts. There's plenty of time for people to suggest things and time for me to play catch up when I'm back at the very end of November. As always, thanks for the free film funnery. There you go. Then he offered to send us snacks. That's in the PS.
Yes.
Please.
By all means.
We're done.
We are done. Shorty. So it's yeah, a short one. Yeah. So no. once again,
under an hour, right?
Are we under an hour.
Whoa.
Once again, my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, now available for holiday shopping, and we are taking pre-orders for the Linoleum Knife T-shirt. You can email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Tell us your size.
Tell us your size.
If you're a small, we'll try to figure out something for
yes.
you.
Yes, and we'll tell you all the information about how to order all that stuff. Again, you can leave us a review on iTunes, which we always appreciate, and you can subscribe to the show for free there. You can also stream this program at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at getglue.com. Of course, check out our friends in the podcast universe. Check out the B-Movies podcast and the Schmoes Know, Team Jack, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Podcrash, Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, The Lunch, and go to ChristyLemire.com, go to Linoleum-Knife.com, where Dave will be writing a more extensive review of Bastards, among other neat stuff coming up. Listen to Gray Drake and Matt Atchity on Rotten Tomatoes Radio, and check out The Frank DeCaro Show and Derek and Romaine on Series Out Q. We were just on again this week. And so until next time, thanks for listening.
Goodbye.